Welcome to the Continued Silence with me, Emma Jane Taylor, on UK Health Radio. The Continued Silence is focused on very uncomfortable conversations of child sexual abuse and the importance of talking openly about this subject to try and normalise this conversation. Child sexual abuse is real. It affects millions of people, young and old, across the world. The work we are doing is very much engaging more lateral thought processes on this terrible crime, supporting survivors, protecting children and helping those not wanting to listen to listen. Today is a little bit of a different show because my resident panel, Chris and Denny, are actually my guests. And I think they're probably more terrified this time than ever before. So it's a joy for me because I get to spend a great session with two of my favourite ladies. So just hear more about what they're doing. Let's hear a little bit about Chris, not just about what you represent as an activist, but as everything that you do, Chris.
So I am a mum. I've got a 25-year-old and a 20-year-old, and I'm married. Been with my husband since I was 15, and he's been a police officer for 30 years now, and he's just about to retire. I started out my professional life as a chartered management accountant and soon realized that really wasn't my life's passion, and the fact that my trauma was coming up in my life at the time of me deciding that really accountancy wasn't my long-term career, I decided that I enjoyed fitness and I was going to become a fitness instructor. So that's where my life started transitioning from being an accountant to the health and wellness platform. And I've been doing that since 2003, really, as my main job.
Amazing. Of course, you know, health and well-being is right up there for me and something that I'm very passionate about. And I know my own personal experiences from the trauma and the recovery years that I call them, actually. It was the health and well-being that really helped me. So I've learned something new today. Chris, chartered management accountant. That's amazing. So you've got the qualification and then you worked in that space, did you?
I worked in it through the whole time I was qualifying.
Right, okay, so qualified, time, training and yeah. Qualifying at the same time and working.
Yeah, because every time you went up a level, you had to get the relevant experience. So every 18 months, I was changing my job to get the experience to match the qualification. Because I wasn't a graduate, I couldn't get any of the graduate training places, even though I did try. When I was at Sainsbury's, I did try to apply for a graduate training course because they got their training paid for whilst they were learning on the job. But because I wasn't a graduate, I got denied that. But it made me even more determined to get there. And I did eventually.
I'm sure that's something that you now use with a lot of your work in the as a businesswoman and in charity as well, because as we know, you know, trying to get funding and donations in needs some thought process to that as well. So might not have been the career you went into essentially in the corporate world, but you're using it now with everything you're doing, I'm sure.
100%. So I do my management accounts for the charity that I've got. And I then have a trustee who is an ACA. I'm a ACMA, but I've got an ACA who's a certified accountant that actually makes sure the accounts, when they go to publication, he checks them all over and he delivers them. So he has oversight of my work that I do for my charity. Yeah.
That's amazing. And I think it's just so nice to be able to know a little bit more about you, and actually that even though you want, so it kind of all links in together really anyway, doesn't it? Because at school you were told don't bother with maths, you then took yourself through training and persevered even when you were told still give it up. You got through that, you got that qualification. Realised you didn't want to do it. You wanted to focus on health and well-being and the trauma and everything else. Moved into charity, moved into well-being, and you're using it anyway. So it all kind of came together, really. And it's really nice
to see. Nothing's wasted.
Nothing is wasted. That's what I always say. Nothing is wasted. Never even the end of the lettuce.
Yeah, that goes to my guinea pigs. I don't eat the end of the lettuce.
of course, well, it's great to know a little bit more about you. Denny, here we go. Here she is. Denny is here as a resident therapist on the panel, but obviously today it's about Denny. Who is Denny?
Yeah, who is Denny? But first of all, before we get on to Denny, what a wonderful description of how trauma and the impact of trauma, if there's hope, motivation, and drive, and a support network, you can navigate and go down all those wonderful different pathways that we often talk about on this show. No one size fits all. And Chris, it was lovely to hear all about that. So, who's Denny? So, Denny is an incredibly proud mother of two children, age 30 and 29. And all parents, we would hope, have that sense of pride. But for me, my two came on a journey with me around my coming out as a gay woman when they were very young, and all of the trauma that was involved in that for me personally, but also my children, what they received in school and from society. So, I have two amazing adults who understand discrimination and fight, just like their mother, very hard for equality and understanding. So I'm also a sister and an aunt to three wonderful nieces and nephews. So a little bit similar to Chris. I loved school, but not for the academics. I loved it because I could be the clown. I loved it because I could have a social network and that I could celebrate my achievements in athletics. I was a UK ranked athlete in the junior level doing heptathlon, and I was cocky and thought I would do that for the rest of my life and didn't need education. Hence leaving school without any formal education. I then got married because that was the route I felt I needed to take, because I was very aware that I would probably be rejected by my family if I came out. So that's a whole nother topic, but I got married and it felt the right thing to do at the time. And I've got these two wonderful children. Went into the RAF because he was in the RAF. And when I came out, was made homeless because it was illegal in those days to have any other form of sexuality other than being heterosexual. And so found myself with suitcases in a town hall in Uxbridge declaring myself homeless, which was a challenge. However, came out of that, had a good network of friends, privately rented, and decided, okay, what do I do now? All of a sudden I'm independent. All of a sudden I've got to adult. So a bit similar to you, Chris, I decided to go and do an access course. Maybe I might be better at academics this time. And got the entrance to university to study a Bachelor of Sports Science honours degree. 3 years later, graduated with a first class. Who would have thought? Denny the Dunce, that I was often called, came out with a first class honours degree. So I'm very, very proud of that. I went into education, went into PE teaching. Sport was always my love and passion. But surprisingly, be careful what you wish for. I really, really hated it. I didn't enjoy it at all. I found myself wanting to get behind the behaviour of the young people that I was teaching. There was never enough time. It felt like I was doing them a disservice. So, bizarrely, I applied for a job managing refuge, and thought that would be a really good grounding for me to use my sports psychology and my mental health modules, and was so privileged to hold that position for 10 years and witnessed the courage of many, many women who left an abusive relationship, and all of the risk that that's involved, and the impact on their children, and the justice system on how, if you've got children, they remain having to be in contact with perpetrators. So it was a phenomenal grounding for me. After that, I decided, well, I didn't decide actually. I was asked, would I go on as a secondment to manage two mental health projects? And that was for people coming out of a section, coming back into the community. And it was an outreach project where we went into their homes to support them, or we were supporting to try and keep them out of going into hospital. So looking at networks, regular visits. Then I became interested in education again, but crisis in the education system. So I went back in as an education welfare officer, seconded into the youth offending team. And again, what a colourful 10 years I had there, and learned so much around youth work, criminality, all of the different approaches and the different sentences young people got, and the gender split in that. It was much more likely that young girls got a much harder sentence than boys. That's where I did my AIM assessment and became an AIM assessor for sexually harmful behaviour. Hence, I think what I quite enjoy about this show is the whole spectrum of how the sexual harm and the harmed is viewed, particularly in young people. And in October 2022, after qualifying myself as a therapist 6 years ago, but then anorexia came back into my life, which had been my coping mechanism since I was 17 for my own trauma, meant that I was back in hospital and having a very challenging time. Meant that once I qualified, I didn't naturally go straight into being a therapist. I needed to look after my own needs. But here I am, 6.5 years later, in private practice, working alongside NED Training Organisation, which is the Neurodiversity Eating Disorders and Disordered Eating Training Organisation with Bernie Wright. I feel very honoured that she has taken me under her wing, and I'm a trainer with them and still going on my own journey of learning and attending all the diplomas out there that you can get on. So there's my colourful rainbow and spectrum. That's Denny.
Oh, I love that. It's so nice to hear. And actually, I want to go back to, now I know Chris was a quiet child at school, and you were not the quiet child, Denny. And I think, you know, even though obviously this is a show about you two, we are obviously staying in the theme of it being about child sexual abuse. And I think those two things are really, really important to recognise. I was the naughty child, you were the clown, Chris was the quiet child. We're probably still similar now, the three of us, right? As women, here we are, but we found through that the what it all meant to the childhood, right? You know, we do say watch out for the naughty child and the clown, but actually also don't forget the quiet child, because that was Chris. And I think, you know, Denny, you know, when you talk about your athletic your potential career that you had back then as a young person, do you ever sort of look back and wish that you had gone around that differently, with the mind you have now, or are you glad that it sort of ended when it did?
Well, that's a really interesting question, and it's actually quite complex and layered for me, because I always regard my athletics was my savior and my demon, very similar to the eating disorder.
Yeah.
Eating disorder dilemma. So initially I got into sport out of freedom and joy. Absolutely loved it. First place in my first ever primary school sports day. Parents beaming with pride. And I very quickly realized that that was the area that I was affirmed. That was the only area that I felt my parents saw me. Every other area I felt otherness, difference, wrong, bad, naughty, dysfunctional. So it was my absolutely saving grace. It enabled me to be out of the house for hours, which was always a joy. It enabled me to be around some very, very inspirational people. And actually, interestingly for me, it enabled me for the first time to see other gay women and make me realize that I'm not the monster that I'm telling myself. And so for me, it was quite complex and layered. When it became tricky was when I got my ranking and got some sponsorship and would start then going into GB squad training, traveling to London. And on the one hand, the affirmation was there. And initially I felt, yeah, look, I'm making my family proud of me. But there came a time where it was, who am I doing this for? You know, I'm training twice a day, 6 days a week, to the point sometimes being very physically sick at the end of sessions. I wasn't having a social life. Christmas Day, I was training. I was keeping a diary. Every coach knew when my periods were, what I was eating. And all of a sudden, I didn't know what my life was about. I'd lost my autonomy, I'd lost my freedom and my joy and my fun. So I made the decision. It was probably the first time as a teenager that I found the courage to say, I'm not doing this anymore. I just can't do it. And goodness me, did I have some consequences as a result of that from my family. And what that taught me was, if that's how I'm treated for stopping something which to me was a hobby and something I liked, I've got no chance by coming out. I need to toe the line. I have to do the right thing. So it's complex, EJ. Do I regret giving it up? No, because do you know what clever little Denny did? She went and found hockey, and she played National League hockey for 15 years around a wonderful variety of women, gay, straight, and my world opened up, and I was probably experiencing for the first time my chosen family. So there's no regrets at all.
And for me, being quiet, I was terrified of making a mistake and drawing attention to myself and being punished again at school, and then them telling whoever I was with at the time, the different parents I was with, and getting punished again at home. So for me, it was more of a coping strategy to keep quiet and keep my head below the parapet and keep silent. And those times I had the courage to speak up, which I did and I've shared, it was a massive thing. And when I wasn't listened to, I'm welling up now. This is ridiculous. When I wasn't listened to, it was like, when is the opportunity ever going to happen again to be able to be seen, heard? So for me, it's really important, everything that you've both said, that we look at the child and what are they presenting or not presenting, and ask them what is going on for them. And if they do share it, do something about it. Actually, physically do something about it. And this is why the mandatory reporting that is out for consultation at the moment across implementation across schools, that it will happen because the government are committed to it, is so important. That if a child does speak up and share what is going on for them, that action has to be taken. It can't just be sat on. It can't just be thought of, oh, that child is got an overactive imagination, or they're just playing out, or they're just, you know, they're just. No, find out what's going on for that child and do something about it. It's so important.
Thank you, Chris. And I think what I also wanted to add, having listened to Denny, is that instead of maybe pulling out the children with the red flags, just look at everyone, look at every child. Let's not waste that time. And I guess that all goes to resources. But look, we're going to take a short break here. My name is Emma Jane Taylor. This is the Silence on UK Health Radio with my panelists, who are today my guests, Chris Tuck and Denny Corby. We'll be back after this.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, so welcome back to today's show. Today is all about Chris and Denny. So Denny and Chris are now working professionally in the areas of helping others, I would say, helping others. So Chris does a lot of work in the health and well-being industry. Denny is a counsellor, and she also works in the education system. Lots of giving back. And is it a surprise that survivors go on to do that? No, of course it isn't. So it's really nice to sort of be able to have this chat so that, you know, our listeners can find out a little bit more. You know, I've learned a new thing about Chris, and that, you know, she really is the person to go to with my charity accounts. And she's going, no, I've got too much to do. But she's a person who has a lot of advice to share as well, and she's probably going, oh god, don't say that. Chris has her own business and she's also got her charity. So what's your business called, Chris?
West Wickham Health and Fitness, hence WWHF.
On her
Because it's a
Twitter.
mouthful otherwise.
West Wickham, and Wickham is Wickham.
Yeah.
And if you Google that, you'll find out everything that you can on Chris. And if you go on social media, you'll always see her doing lots of motivational stuff in that area for physical, mental, and emotional health. And then obviously you've got your charity. So talk to us about your charity, Chris.
So survivors of abuse, what it says on the tin, is charity number 116712. And the website is, again, Survivors of Abuse. And I had a breakdown just after I had my first child, and I've shared that before. And that is what made me change from accountancy to fitness, because that was a love rather than a thing I had to do to get security and stability. So I started that in 2003, and I then became aware of something was not quite right with me. Hence, why was I going through what I was going through? What was the causal reason for how I was feeling and how I was turning up into the world with my children, with my husband, all of those relationships? So it was really sort of like more of an exploration of what was going on for me that led me on to creating an 8-week course, setting up a charity, writing a book. So it led my own ill health, mental health, physical health, led on to me doing what I've done now. So it's all been part of my journey. And now I obviously earn a living from what I do, but I also give back in so many different ways. I do a lot of work for free, a lot of work for free. And I think some victim and survivors, when they see us out there on our platforms, they think everything we do is to do with money and earning, and it just isn't. The earning and paying the bills is, of course, has to happen because we've all got bills to pay, but there's so much giving back that we do. And I think people need to understand that, hear that, and appreciate that. So that's me.
I think we need a round of applause for that, actually, Chris, because that's such an important, what you've said and what you're doing is so important. But I think also what's really important is that last statement. So many people are doing so many great things, and there's only so long you can volunteer before you get to a point where you are as a place you know, at a place of financial difficulty. And of course, everyone does over and above what anyone gives them in any form of donations and fundraising. And it's not about that. It's about keeping the movement going, about keeping everybody independently going on their different things. And I think, so thank you for saying that. It's really important. And I know that a lot of people out there will relate to that as well, because so many people are doing so much in this space. Yet people fail to realize that, it's hard going. It's hard going to function like this all the time, isn't it, Chris?
Yeah. And I just want to add, the stuff that I've set up and I'm doing, probably like you, I've actually invested my own money into it, to a point where my husband's going, they're our savings, they're not your savings. Can you pull it back a little bit? And I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. It's cost an awful lot of money to even, publish the book, set up the charity, yes, do the peer-to-peer support group, whatever it is I'm involved in, it all costs money. And so I earn over here to invest that money over there to help victim and survivors. And I'm sure most of us do that.
Yes, absolutely relate to that. I think we all do, right? Denny, she's got her hand up. Denny, there
yeah.
she is.
Chris, I love it when you say things that make me have golden nugget moments, because from a counsellor's point of view, we're kind of getting the word out there. It's no surprise, and it probably won't come as a surprise, that the profession of therapy and counselling is predominantly sat in within a white middle class profession, because the cost to qualify as a therapist financially, let alone time and your own uncovering the layers, is huge. And what I'm a great advocate of is that we need more people with that lived experience to go through that training. And how can we make that more accessible? And how can we make the profession far more, my words, raw and gritty? You know, that people who have actually lived, been there, who have maybe come out the other side, whatever that means and however that looks, but it still very much sits within the access to it. You have to have money. So it tips into a bit what you've said. And I guess I'm going to say that I absolutely hear everything you've said. But if we don't self-care and we don't attend to our own needs first, which is about paying bills and making a way in this world, then we're not going to be operating from a stable foundation in order, because whatever we do, whether it's therapy, advocacy, campaigning, activism, we're kind of wanting autonomy, right? We're kind of wanting other people to feel that they can be empowered to live the life that they want. So we need to be stable to do that. So that was a great thread, Chris. I love it when you do that.
Oh, she's been like, I think Chris needs to present a show one week. I mean, she's a chartered management accountant. She's come in with some golden nuggets this week. And I think brilliant, everything that you said there. And I think everyone listening will understand this and appreciate you sharing that, because so many people struggle with this conversation. And I know the online world can be very dark on these conversations. And you do have to sort of sidestep those, because the bigger picture is people will understand. And you know, sometimes sometimes you just have to step away, don't you? I had a great quote this morning, I'm going to try and find out what it is before I actually say it, but while I'm trying to find that, I'm going to take another short break, because after this we're going to bring some more people into the conversation to talk about some of the work that they're doing as campaigners and survivors. So do not go anywhere, we will be back after this.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, welcome back to today's show. If you're only just joining us, then you are very late. You are 30 minutes late, you are forgiven, because you can go back onto UK Health Radio and you can download this and listen again, as you can to all of our shows. I'm here today as the presenter, as always, but today my resident panelist, Chris and Denny, are my guests. So we've been finding out a little bit more about them. One thing I didn't get actually before that last break was Denny's website, because she has got a very, very shiny new website to share. I've seen it. It's brilliant. So Denny, tell everybody how they can find you.
Okay. Thank you for that, EJ, because as you know, I've been as honest as I think I always am, and it was terrifying, the procrastination of me trying to do a website without the funds to get someone else to do it, and with my, I think, what is emerging ADHD profile, was really, really quite scary. Anyway, it's done, it can be added to, it will be added to, but you can find me on dennycorbycounselling.co.
And Denny is D-N-I, not D-E-N-I-S-E. So you can find a Denny, D-E-N-I, Corby Counselling. You're not Denny, you're not Denise for that one, are you, Denny?
No.
She confuses me.
My assigned name at birth was Denise. I identify as Denny because I have no ability to recognise who Denise is. It was my choice to kind of create Denny. Denny is who I am.
And to me, you'll always be DC.
That is very true. And you'll always be Air Soul Sprayer to me.
Yes, we'll talk about that on another show. Jean, Caroline are now joining us. Welcome to today's show. It's a very informal show today. We are just having a summary of catching up with my panel, who they are, sharing with my listeners who they are, because I think it's really important. These girls work so hard in their space as activists and therapists. And, you know, I know how much they do because I follow them. I just feel it's important that we all recognize the people who are doing such great work. So thank you, Chris and Denny. for everything you do to support me here on UK Health Radio and outside of here. It doesn't go unnoticed, so thank you for that. And also welcome to Jean and Caroline. So Jean, Caroline, they are survivors of child sexual abuse. They do a lot of work outside of their own main roles in life to support survivors, to campaign. Now, Jean, I know, is involved in lots of things, which we'll hear about today, as is Caroline. But I wanted to bring you on today just to sort of, as another sort of look, really, on the other side of what goes on. You are not in the professional field of having a charity or as a therapist. You are purely giving your time and energy into supporting survivors. So I'm going to come to you, Jean, because Jean is someone I've sort of known for quite a while now, and she's everywhere. When I look online, she's supporting everybody. She's sharing everything. She's getting behind. She's championing everybody all the time. And obviously, you've got your own difficult story. But what was it, Jean, that made you think, right, I want to get out there and help others?
Well, my own recovery. I mean, I went to my doctor at 51, wondering whether it was what I was. I had my problem was the fact that I was sexually abused as a child. And going to a professional, because all of us have fear-based, or a lot of us are fear-based. And I didn't want to go to a counsellor because I didn't know who to trust. And so I went to my GP, who told me, because he knew me, to go away and get on with it, because I'd got two successful sons and I was still married. And I did actually ask, because I still had the strength to ask him, knowing that if it was my childhood that was the problem, I needed a counsellor. And again, counsellors are out there 10 a penny. Well, they're quite expensive, but who do you go to if you don't know what's wrong with you? And I asked him for a counsellor's name, thinking that if he's a professional, he wouldn't give me a dud one. And he told me, so he gave me the name and the number of this counsellor, but he also gave me the advice that if I ever used it, I'd be worse off than I am now. So I put it on my fridge and I never used it. So he delayed my recovery for another 6 or 7 years. And it was okay. It was a group that I spotted that had been started up in my area.
Which was the group called, Jean?
The group's called Stop Start.
Stop Start.
Yeah, it was called Stop Start.
Well, let's give them a shout out. Let's give Stop Start a shout out. Where are they?
They were in King's Lynn, but they're no longer there. Sue was running it, and she cleverly put faces on a picture in the newspaper, which was the thing that you did. You looked at newspapers back in that day. And I see that they were there and went and joined it, because there was nothing in our area to help anybody. And her daughter had been sexually abused, and she decided to start up this group with another person. And I didn't really say anything for the first couple of years. I listened to what all the other survivors said. It ballooned when the Jimmy Savile thing came out. Loads of people joined her group when there was the Jimmy Savile thing came. But again, like all of us, we do so much. She did get exhausted. She did get an award for what she did, but she did get exhausted, and her health was a problem. And she had to stop it. And obviously then nobody else stepped forward, because to be quite honest, I wasn't in a place to take it on. I was supporting her in any way that I could, but I wasn't capable of doing that. But in the meantime, we did have a charity that did come in and give us a few talks and things like that. And quite a lot of the women there were going to there for counselling. And it was the women there, I thought, well, their heads ain't falling off, or their arms ain't falling off. I'm going to try it. So it
what was that moving. Group called, Jean?
That was the same group. It's called the Stop Start group. Ah, the one-to-one. It was called one-to-one. They are still going. It's called the one-to-one project.
And where are they? King's Lynn?
King's Lynn. Yeah.
Let's give them a shout out, the one-to-one project in King's Lynn, because I think it's important. We can share as many things, recommendations.
So I joined, I went to them for a year because that's when they were offering a year. And by this time, I was either 62 or 63. And so I had to actually learn to talk.
Wow, Jean, it's so, today's great because I know what I know of you, Jean, and now I'm finding a little bit more about you. I saw Denny like literally fall apart when you said what you said about the doctor. And I think probably a good time for Denny to come into this conversation because, you know, go away and get on with it. I mean, I would like to think that's advice that's completely changed this day, right, Denny?
Well, I would like to think so, but the reality is I'm sure there's still that attitude out there in some professionals, let's be honest. There's good and bad in all professions, isn't there? First of all, I wanted to say, Jean, my goodness, you've given us a real example, and I'm so sorry that happened to you, of not being seen and heard, and Chris was talking about that earlier. So I am truly sorry that happened, but I'm also inspired by you because your tenacity to keep going and find your tribe. And we often say this on here, find your space, not one size fits all. I read I'm reading a book at the moment, which is called Square Pegs. It's phenomenal. And it says, it's tempting if the only tool you have is a hammer to treat everything as if it's a nail. And isn't that a wonderful quote to go, not one size fits all. And I say it nearly every time. Find your tribe, find your space, find your therapist. And if you're not comfortable with the first, you have every right to terminate that service with clarity and openness. A good therapist is going to hear that, respect it. And I think that's the message I give out on a regular basis. This is about flexibility, toolboxes, different space. And I'm just delighted, Jean, that you found yours. And it's really lovely to meet you.
Thank you.
It's so great having you here, Jean. And obviously, I know that you do a lot of campaigning for the Not My Shame movement, but you also do a lot for No More Silence as well, don't you? Yes.
Yeah. So we're a group.
Tell us about that.
So we're a group of survivors, and I've met all these survivors one way or another, where I've stood up in various spaces with the police, CCGs, places like that, and asked, why is it we haven't got anything in our area to help people who've been sexually abused when they were a child? And the CCG, when I plucked up courage to actually stand up in the end, it was like I took this shotgun in the meeting and I'd actually pulled the gun. I pulled the trigger. And they sidelined me and then, they sidelined me and pushed me away, and nobody ever helped me. But so a lot of the people that I now have in my portraits, I've stood up and spoken out, and there's always been somebody come and disclose to me. And I think that's what we need. I think like I see the pictures in the newspaper, and I could see that there was real live people, so I didn't feel alone. Mm. And I think a lot of people will come. So I met this really lovely lady at a networking meeting, the ladies business networking meeting, because businessmen won't give you any money for childhood sex abuse. I've tried all that. So I thought, well, we'll go to a networking, women's networking thing. So me and I've got a daughter from another mother, or that's what I call her. We went along to this meeting, and this lovely lady had just started up her photography business. And I was telling them, I was coming up for 70 at the time, and I said to them, well, do you know what I've done for my 70th birthday? I've written to Doc. So I'm going to go on there, I'm going to bear myself, and then I'm going to tell him about that I was sexually abused as a child. So, but anyway, that didn't happen. But they were amazed by what I'd said. And I said to this girl, this photographer, so what do you do? And she said, I'm just starting up a photography business. And I used to do a lot for Marilyn Horse, Freedom from Abuse. And I used to lay on things, and she'd come down for nothing, and I'd find somewhere for nothing. And she would inform either teachers or children and parents and things like that, all the stuff that she does. I said to her, oh, will you take a photo? Because it's really now getting difficult for newspapers to turn up. And she said, no, I'd rather take a photo of you and your daughter from another mother, because she knew that we were both survivors. And she said, have you got any more? And because obviously I'd got all these others that I picked up in all the things that I'd stood up and said, you know, why is there nothing? Or I'd stood up there with Marilyn Horta's stuff and people had disclosed to me. So I had all these people that I wrote to and said, would you come and be part of this portrait? So she's took all our portraits and it's really lovely. She handed over all in all the responsibility to us. So we had took how we wanted, where we wanted, and we said what we wanted and how we wanted. And so we've got 11 portraits. Some have stories, some have not, and there's different reasons for that. I think there's a couple that haven't, and I think there was a time span once, and the other one just didn't do it, which is, again, is fair enough. And so we take these around to different venues that I get for nothing, because I'm a pensioner, and so I do this, you know, I try and get places for nothing. And I met Emma Jane at the House of Lords. We took it to the House of Lords last year. So we did 7 events last year, which was our first year. We started in April and we did 7. And the not the last one, but one near the end was the one in the House of Lords where Emma Jane came along and said hello to us. So they're in the Samaritans in Norwich at the moment in their window. And they've been in there for
amazing.
A fortnight.
And amazing.
Yeah, for another 4 weeks.
Amazing. Chris, what were you going to say?
Yeah, I just think it's amazing of like Jean's and other survivors' tenacity and the fact that, you know, we get up, we don't take no for an answer, and we just drive forwards with peer-to-peer campaigning, doing things like that fantastic campaign that Jean's just explained. And I'm just amazed all the time at victims and survivors who come forward, share their lived experience, but also go on to help others. I just think it's brilliant. And that is probably the only way that we're going to move forwards, by doing these collaborations. Even this radio show as a collaboration, it's just the way that it's going to move the conversation on.
Absolutely. Also, I just want to add, we called no more silence, because we're fed up with people saying it's a difficult subject, it's a sensitive subject, it's a dark subject. No, it's just a subject.
And actually, I was in town yesterday and someone came up and talked to me because they'd seen the campaign, the Not My Shame campaign. And it was like, oh, well, I would never have spoken to that person had he not seen the campaign. And so wasn't that great? It's opened a little door, and he messaged me last night to say, I hope that I get to chat to you again. And I'm like, absolutely. You know, that's the good thing about all of the work that we do, whatever it is. Some people are aligned to what you're doing, Chris, to Jean, to me. It doesn't matter. There's something somewhere for everybody. And that's the point of what we're doing. Jean, it's lovely to see. I could speak to you all day, Jean, but I've got Caroline there. Great to see Caroline. Thank you, Caroline, for coming in today. Now, Caroline is a survivor, and I know is doing a lot of work supporting a lot of things, obviously the campaign, and I know some charity work as well. So, you know, what was it, Caroline, that you really got drawn to as a survivor with moving into sort of some advocacy?
Yeah, I think, to be honest, I think it's about a year and a half ago, I saw the work that you was doing on the LinkedIn space initially. And I remember just being blown back. I remember sitting there going, oh my days, you know, someone's really owning this. You can talk about it. You don't need to hide from it. And for me, that was really empowering to go, yeah, do you know what? I'm hiding here. I'm hiding. There's a massive part of me that just doesn't get exposed. I'm going, that doesn't exist. I'm over here. And actually, it just enabled us to go, I need to incorporate all of me to be in the next part of my journey. And I think your strength just enabled us to go, yes, that's it. It's that. And the campaign with the Not My Shame, I was like, wow, that really hit home. Because there's so many places where I felt that misplaced shame happened, not just in that one event. I say one event, it actually happened multiple times for me, but not just in that, but in many places after that. So it enabled me to just take that step back and go, yeah, this doesn't belong to me, in all these places where I learned to just take that pain, say it belonged to me, and just carry it. And the rucksack was getting bigger. And I was like, I feel like I've got 5 suitcases with me everywhere I go. And I'm like, this is really draining. And it started to overspill, right? So I think for me, the campaign is really important because it's not just about me. It's about all those other survivors that, like me, sat in the dark, were hiding, mainly because I think in the 80s or 90s, it was projected that anyone that had been through abuse are likely to go and abuse again. That, for me, that's what really resonated. I'm like, I'm keeping my mouth shut. I'm going to get judged here. And then really seeing your work, Emma, has enabled us to go, nah, this isn't who I am. This is who I am, and this is how, you know, I'm going to be, and trying to be ruthless with those critics that do exist out there, because we know they do, and to not give them that airtime anymore. No, my energy is not going there. My energy is going over here. So it's inspired me to do the poetry on some of the things, the thoughts. I tend to be quite feeling based, so it's inspired me to do poetry. And like Jean set the trends. I'm like, I'm going to be brave too. I'm going to go stand outside Asda. I might not chat to everybody. Depends on how I'm at on that day. But yeah, to go, I'm not afraid anymore. It's like Home Alone, you know, I'm not afraid anymore. To go, it was that. That's not now. And yeah, so any survivor out there that is in that space, where they're either hiding from their true self, and that takes a lot of energy to put on a mask, whether they're ashamed of who they are because it's misplaced shame, whether they're still going through behaviors or patterns or chaos, whatever it is. I want this to be that strength to say, do you know what? You know, I don't know what the end destination is, because I know there's a lot of people that talk about that, you know, coming through the other side. For me, it's a journey. And I just know that this is giving me that light on that journey to go, wow, this is what it's about. It's giving back. It's that purpose. It just gives hope, right?
And I think that's, you know, whether it's No More Silence, whether it's Not My Shame, whether it's Survivors of Abuse, whatever it is out there that works for you, do it, because it will help you. I found personally, I just felt like I was going around in circles for years and years and years, and I just got sick of it. I just got sick of it because, you know, I felt like it wasn't my fault. It wasn't my shame, which is why, you know, I put that t-shirt on. Never in a million years did I think that it would end up the way it is now. But, and that's not for everyone, right? And I accept that. Mm. But for those that it's helping, like the No More Silence, or the One-to-One Project, or the Stop Star, or the Survivors of Abuse, that's okay, right? It doesn't matter who it is, as long as it's helping someone. And I think that's the bottom line. You know, Chris has said some valuable things today about campaigning and the amount of people investing a lot of time. I think it's really important to recognize it doesn't have to be anyone in particular. You have to find that lane that helps you. I appreciate that the Not My Shame campaign is not always a very palatable t-shirt for some people, which is why there's more palatable products available for those that want to. But I also appreciate it might not be for anyone anyway, because they might not be at that place. I was certainly not at this place where I felt comfortable to even say Not My Shame, let alone wear that kind of t-shirt. But I am now, because, like I say, I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it. We all are, right? And it's not, it's about what we can do beyond here to support survivors, you know, our family as such, and the next generation, because importantly, what we're doing is not just about today, it's about the next generation. And I think that's where we've got to go to with all of this. It, you know, so anyone who sort of isn't being kind to any of these activists and advocacies and campaigners out there, remember, this is about the future. This isn't about just now. The work being invested now is the legacy that everyone's wanting to leave. And that's okay. I mean, you know, we have to work together, right? We have to collaborate. There's no competitions. There's no he said something did more than me or what. It's all horrendous. And let's not forget that. So, well, look, Caroline and Jean, you're doing tremendous work. And I thank you very much for coming on just to share that with us today. So thank you. Thank you to Chris for certainly making me feel like I should have tried harder in my math class. I'm joking. She's an amazing woman. And thank you to Denny. Look, Denny, I can't let a show go. Actually, I got Chris to summarize the last one, didn't I? So I can't let today's show go without a summary from Denny. And of course, you know, we'll be late summer when this goes out. So fill your boots.
Oh, thanks, EJ. I love it when you throw things my way. So a summary. Well, we've covered, I mean, what's been beautiful about today is I've been doing this show now for maybe coming up to a year, I think. And isn't it lovely that we spend the time that we do? But today I've learned so much more about Chris and hearing how from as children, when harm is caused to us, we absolutely internalize that. That's the premise of the trauma and the impact on us. And it's all interjected with attachments and trauma bonds, and it's complex and it has layers. But what Jean and Caroline have absolutely highlighted, and I echo, is you have to see it to be it. I believe that in all areas of life, I've just spoken about my growing up knowing I was gay and terrified, knew what the consequences were going to be. I saw nobody else around me, so I hid. I remained in the dark, classic, the closet, wherever. And it's the same for this. You've got to see it to be it to be it. So we're not saying that this message is about you should disclose, you shouldn't do that. That's not what any of this is about. It's about look at the people who can find the space to do that and are at the place that they want to. And what we're talking about behind strength, I think, is that when we show vulnerability and our authentic selves to others, we give permission for them to take off their mask. Even if the mask doesn't get taken off physically there and then, the seed is planted. And in therapy and counseling, I'm a real believer that you might not get the outcome that we sometimes wish straight away, but when you scramble thinking and you plant the seed, could be a year down the line, could be 2 years down the line, people remember what you say. So I am privileged and honored to stand alongside this. And EJ, I'd like to personally thank you because I came into this coming out of, as you know, quite a difficult time and trying to establish myself. So you gave me the confidence and the courage to stand forward and go, yeah, Denny, you can do this. So I want to thank you for that because it's been a real pleasure to learn and grow myself through this.
And I also just say about the t-shirt, that was just a fabulous thing to do. And I've grown since I've dared to start going out. And I found out things about myself. Because I projected my feelings of insecurity onto a member of staff in Matland. And I didn't realize it till we was having that conversation where it's just where we process a bit slower. And all of a sudden I thought, oh, I don't think that was her problem. I think it was mine. And then it spurred me on to do even more.
Oh, thank
So
you,
thank
Jean.
you for the t-shirt. Yes.
Thank you. And can we all say thank you to Johan because he'll be listening to this now going, you should have stopped to this show a long time ago and we haven't. So I'm going to have to say goodbye, Jean, Caroline, Denny, and Chris. Sorry, Johan. But thank you to everyone behind the scenes with me here, Christine, Johan, and everyone at UK Health Radio. This is a brilliant platform for survivors. And I'm grateful to all of you for supporting me and these guys here. I'll see you next time. Have a great day.